welcome to the latest episode of this, our second season of the How an Employee Benefits and Wellbeing podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Gregson, Executive Director here at Howden. For this series, we've been focusing on wellbeing, and the topic for this episode is particularly mental wellbeing, as we're fast approaching Mental Health Awareness Week. Now, as many of you will know, the theme for that week is loneliness. And to that end, I'm delighted to be joined today by Christine Husbands, Managing Director of our Red Arc business, which is Howden's specialty nursing practice, who recently wrote a guide for clients on this very topic. So, Christine, welcome. And before we start, it'd be great if you could give us a little bit more of an introduction to yourself and the Red Arc business.
Hi, everybody, and thanks, Matthew. Yeah, I'm Christine Husbands, as Matthew said. I'm Managing Director of Red Arc, and we provide long-term support to people with serious ill health, be that physical ill health, things like cancer, cardiac, etc., and, of course, mental ill health. So our nurses, based here in the office in Chester, provide long-term telephone support to individuals who need their long-term support. And each individual has access to their own nurse on a regular basis, guiding them through their journey to recovery, whatever that takes in all its twists and turns. So we come across a lot of people who have mental illness, whether that's a diagnosed mental illness such as anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, and many more, but also a lot of emotional and mental illness type problems alongside physical health conditions as well. So we have a very experienced team of registered general and mental health nurses. And hopefully during the course of this next few minutes, I'll share some of their experience with you.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Christine. So to kick off today, I guess the context for this session and mental health and mental well-being is that we're coming out of COVID, which we know has had a significant impact for all of us on our state of mental well-being. But then also, it seems we're coming straight out of that and into a series of economic and other pressures, which no doubt are going to exacerbate the situation further. What's your take on where mental health is in the workplace right now and where it should feature on HR's priority list?
Well, just kind of stepping back from the workplace and HR's priority list for a moment and just winding back, mental health services in the NHS, and this isn't a criticism, this is not a criticism of the NHS, but were very, very stretched before the pandemic. Pandemic came along and we know that a lot more people suffered with mental illness, whether as a result of loneliness, isolation, and many other factors during the pandemic. And we saw those services become even more stretched. And Mind, in fact, actually says we are in the middle of a mental health emergency. So in terms of resources to help individual with mental illness or mental health concerns, there is the massive waiting list for anybody who needs help. So that is clearly a massive reason why it needs to be high up the agenda for employers and HR departments, because clearly it is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, cause of short-term absence. So to have a productive workforce, you're needing people at work, and also in terms of retaining people. More and more we hear people really feeling that their employer has a duty to look after their mental health and their well-being, and are looking for their employer to provide a workplace which does help with their mental health and well-being.
Thank you. My understanding, my sense of it is that definition of mental health, and indeed the expectations of the level of support that employees have of their employers, just keeps broadening and broadening. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. And I think most employers would agree at the moment that, that recruitment and retention of staff is absolutely key. And so I think it's kind of a bit like the housing market. It's almost like a buyer's market, if you like, in terms of employees. And they can, be choosy between employers and kind of set the stall on what they're looking for. So yeah.
And Chrissy, just to help our audience, one of the things that I've heard you talk about before is kind of your approach or your model for thinking kind of holistically, if you like, about the individual situation and indeed the steps that employers should take. Just to help people give context to some of the detail we'll go into today, could you talk through that model quickly for us?
Yeah, it's very simple. It's really thinking about, in an ideal world, what would you want? And so starting with prevention, I mean, clearly we'd all like to prevent any form of illness, wouldn't we? Certainly. So we're talking about mental illness, we want to prevent that. So it's thinking about how, as an employer, what you can do to prevent mental ill health, be that tools and resources, services, working practices, etc. So it's prevent. Then it's going to happen. We know some people are going to become unwell, whether it's physical or mental. So it's about, how do you detect that? How do you pick that up? How do you move forward with it? So it's detection. What tools have you got to detect? And some of the apps have some really good tools in there for picking up signs and detecting. But it could be that Johnny sitting next to Mabel notices that she's not quite herself. It's about detecting. So then once you've detected, clearly you've got to do something about it in terms of managing that and doing and trying to turn that corner, but obviously for the good of the individual, but clearly for the organization as well. So we've got prevent, detect, manage, and then it's about recover or sustain, and back into that kind of prevention thing about how do we make sure that that continues in the best way for the individual and the organization as a whole, and hopefully stays back in that prevent box again rather than going round and round that circle. That makes sense.
It does indeed. And I'd like to particularly pick up on the prevention and the detection piece with you today, because my sense has been that the employee benefits market, and for those who are lucky enough to have, for example, income protection and full medical insurance, that they've tended to have the services or the safety net available to them when it comes to that manage and recovery stage. You know, income protection is designed as much to get people back to work nowadays as it is to actually help support the condition, and medical likewise. We know claims around mental health are increasing in incidence and cost in medical plans all the time. To me, it seems like the prevention and detection stages feel to me kind of, if you like, under supported and under resourced in mental health today. And I say that because for me, we think of physical well-being by comparison. You know, the prevention is simply about being active and fit. We think about detection. There are great screening in place. If we look at how that's developed over the last 2 years with COVID, into home testing kits, virtual assessments, and you name it. It seems to me when it comes to mental health and well-being, it is that prevention and detection stage that needs a lot more work. And not just, I think, in products and services, but actually culturally and in terms of the role of HR and managers. I don't even agree with that, but if you do, it'd be great if you could explore that for us, because I'm mindful that understanding how to spot the signs, what the role of HR managers and indeed other employees are in spotting the signs, and then knowing and being confident enough to take the right steps to support the individual, that's a big difference to just putting in place products and services. Would you agree with that? And could you just kind of expand on that prevention detection piece for us?
Yeah, absolutely, Matthew. So, yes, you're absolutely right. When I first got involved in this type of work quite some time ago, kind of an EAP was probably as good as it got, which is great, but very much there for when there's a problem. And over the last few years, as you'll be only too aware, there's been much more of a move towards well-being. And well-being, the reason for well-being is, to stay well, both physically and mentally. And I think that focus on well-being is a great part of the prevention aspect, if you like. So it's massively important on the well-being side, and well-being can mean so many things to so many different people, and there's lots of people more qualified than me to talk about well-being. But very much, yes, there are tools and resources there for people, but it's about culturally and giving people almost the permission to prioritize time for themselves. Is there somewhere they can take a walk at lunchtime? Do they have facilities to go and have a bit of quiet time? Flexible working, allowing people to focus on an element of self-care in whatever way that helps them. And obviously that's a massive variety for a massive number of people. Helping people in ways to deal with their other responsibilities. And I think that's something we've seen grow quite a lot during COVID, that people who have developed caring responsibilities. Obviously, if managing that alongside work is difficult, then it would be a cause of stress. And so that kind of leads me on to the next point, that there are lots of times in our lives when things are difficult. It's kind of called life. And some things are very difficult, and some things may happen, such as a bereavement or, a redundancy or relationship problem. And we might not be feeling very happy for a while because these things are going on. And that's absolutely true. And I'm not belittling it in any shape or form. But that's a normal human reaction to actually some difficult circumstances. That's not mental illness. It's not, you're not mentally ill because you're grieving or because you are having a difficult time with a relationship or what have you. However, if that period of your life and what you're going through isn't addressed, then it can become a mental illness. You can become depressed. You can be suffering from a severe anxiety. So I think it's important to distinguish between a normal reaction to everyday things that are difficult and mental illness, but be mindful that some of these everyday things, or not everyday things, but some of these difficult things in our lives can lead to mental illness if we don't deal with them or are unable to get help to see those through. I think education is massively important, and it's, you know, we've known a lot over the last few years in the area of mental health, and celebrities have got involved, which is great in terms of reducing the stigma of mental health. And there's a lot going on in workplaces as well, and that's absolutely great. And I think it's fundamentally important to understand a little bit about mental illness, what it is and what it isn't, what the signs are, what to do about them, that everybody in an organisation, not just HR, and not just line managers, but also colleagues, are aware of the fact that of the sorts of things that can behavior people can exhibit if they are becoming mentally unwell, and to be able to have a conversation. And again, that brings me to culture. So culturally, making that okay to do that, making that something that the organization wants to support. So there's lots in there, really, in terms of.
And one of the key points you've said there for me, Christine, that if you have a view on it, is when it comes to the ability to spot signs and indeed knowing how to address it. I mean, I would like that. That would sometimes, I think, fill me with dread to think, what is my obligation and am I doing the right thing? Like, what's your view on kind of the duty of care? Maybe that's too strong a word, that the manager or the HR team actually has. Like, is it something that does need to be that little bit better defined? Or is it something that we're just asking people to try their best? Like, how should HR and managers really reflect on their role in this? How seriously do they need to take it?
Well, clearly, I'm sure all employers listening here care about their employees and want to do the best for them and to help them stay well. And clearly, colleagues and friends, it doesn't have to be in the workplace environment, you know, want to see the best for everybody. So I think it's really, really very simple. If you notice that someone doesn't see themselves, then it's kind of, they're usually really prompt. They usually respond to emails like that. And they're suddenly not, or they're becoming unusually aggressive or unusually withdrawn. Clearly, if you notice anything about overuse of alcohol or drugs, well, that's a very obvious and urgent sign. But it's very much about knowing the individual and knowing what's normal for them. And then it's about having a very nice, straightforward conversation in a thought out kind of environment. So it's no point doing it right beside the coffee machine, if we still have such coffee machines, or, you know, in a public space. But having a conversation, say, you don't seem yourself, are you okay? And just by asking that question, the individual will think, gosh, someone cares. Now, generally, I will say generally, a lot of people will say, fine, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. And I think time to talk, and the Samaritans talk about this quite a lot, should always ask twice. So either at the same time, you say, you know, you don't see yourself, are you okay? Yeah, yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Are you sure? Or a later date, are you sure okay? Because you still don't see yourself. You know, I'm here if you want to talk to me. And usually on that second time, they might say, well, I've had a few problems, this and that. And it's then being aware of the services and resources that are available internally. So you may have a mental health first aid representative or a team of representatives in your organisation. So they are a great place to signpost to. You may have a range of tools available to the individual, maybe an EAP. It may be apps that are available, such as things like Thrive is particularly good because that does do a clinical assessment. So it's knowing what's available and signposting. And if you are really worried, going to notify HR and or the GP if needs be.
Chrissy, one of the things I'd like to unpack that I really like about what you said, but I'm still trying to get right on my own mind, is that sense that actually everybody in the organisation has an opportunity and maybe even an obligation, right, to just think about spotting the signs, etc. Do you still see that there's a way to successfully roll that out? Is it still a question of saying, you know, HR should be the owners, the custodians of that approach and that culture? It should then first go out to line managers, because maybe that the responsibility to spot the signs, to know the individual, as you said, really knowing what's normal for them and what's not, and then to the wider kind of peer groups, right, the wider employee population. Do you still see that it's best rolled out in that type of way? So, you know, our audience today, should they be thinking themselves as almost the training the trainers, right? Learning at the core, teaching the line managers what to do, and then helping them educate the wider population? Or would you go through different channels? Because if we're asking everybody to get engaged with this and take some responsibility, that feels to me like it could be a little bit overwhelming or scattered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel there's a right way to roll it out?
Well, I guess it probably does have to start with HR and through the sort of line manager route. But I think if in an organisation you can kind of develop it culturally, for that the people look out for each other and they understand how simple it is to ask the question, are you okay? You don't see yourself. And know that they can suggest what they can do.
I was just going to ask, Chrissy, do you agree? My sense is that when we talk about culture and when we talk about saying that this is something that should be adopted culturally, for me, that means from the very top of the organisation down. So we're shifting from HR being the custodian, the owner, to the executive of the business. Yes. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, what about spotting the signs? The other thing about knowing what resources to have in place, do you typically find, and particularly think about the Red Up business and the nurses that you have, do you typically find that there are some resources that are more absent than others, for maybe for a better description? You said, you know, everyone tends to have an EAP. We also know that could be a bit of a tick box exercise. Are there any products, services, or initiatives that you do find or think are lacking versus others? Or would you just focus purely on the cultural piece of everybody learning how to deal with this?
No, I think you're right, there is something lacking. And I think, you know, the cultural piece about everybody learning, that's about spotting the signs and taking the first steps, but you need to have somewhere to signpost and refer the individual to, because clearly, you know, colleagues and line managers, etc., are not mental health specialists, they're not mental health nurses, they're not mental health doctors, and it would be dangerous to try and get involved in that sort of thing. To both parties, it can be dangerous for the one trying to help as well. So very much, you know, understanding that your role is as a signposter, so prevention, detecting and signposting. So yes, I mean, EAPs is a great port of call, but EAPs tend to only go so far. PMI is there and have a wide range of psychological type of interventions. But what we find in our work is that so often there's such a gap. So people, there's an EAP, but if they are anything beyond sort of moderate anxiety, depression and other things, then generally, and I am generalizing because some do give more, there's nothing to offer them. And some EAPs even turn people away and say, I'm sorry, your condition is too bad. And so they may not have PMI or they may not wish to go down that route. So they're left then saying, well, I've just got to wait for the NHS. There's nothing for me. And the NHS waiting lists are very, very long. So that individual is, one, being rejected, which isn't anywhere near great when you're already feeling very, very unwell mentally. And two, facing a massive wait on the NHS for NHS psychological services. So we see the gap there at that sort of more serious end of people getting support quickly at that serious end.
Indeed, thank you. And obviously appreciating that that's where Red Arc could kind of step in and support, although that's not necessarily the purpose of today's webinar. I guess the question is, I'm mindful of yours and the audience's time, is there anything we've missed so far in this conversation? Because I'm thinking, you know, we've got the cultural problem to solve, which is from executive to HR to managers to the peer group of employees, all feeling like they are confident in helping detect where their colleagues are at, where their friends are at, and then confident helping signpost to the right things. We've then talked about kind of some of the products and services and how to use them properly, and if there are indeed gaps today. So I think I've got EAP and medical, actually might I still have a gap? Does that then, back to your kind of four pillars of thinking about prevention, detection, management and recovery, does that deal with all of it, or are there still other things you would say HR professionals need to think about to successfully deliver on a mental well-being approach?
I think it goes a long, long way. I think the point, and it may be inherent in what you said, but I think it's probably worth drawing out separately, is that of communication. And it's communicating. So as a HR team, as an organisation, you are well purchase and contract with a range of organisations to provide a suite of services, whether it's EAP, PMI, wellbeing services, whatever. But what I often see that the issue is that people on the ground, some people within HR, if it's a big HR team, other people as line managers and colleagues, don't really understand what's there, and they don't really understand what it's for. So if you are speaking to a colleague that you realise is not doing great and needs some help, it's important you understand what's available to you all and what it's for, so that you'll signpost them into something that is relevant for them, rather than, well, it must be something we can do, I'm not quite sure what, leave it with me. So it's that understanding, being very clear, almost like a guide to the wellbeing services. This is what we've got, and this is what it's for, and this is what it's not for, maybe.
Hmm. Yeah, no, thank you. I think that makes a lot of sense. One of the things I'd love to come back and ask you quickly, and then we might be on time for today, is obviously I introduced Stacey, it's Mental Health Awareness Week next week, and the main theme is on loneliness, which I know you've written about recently. That's one of those, back to a comment of mine earlier, that I wouldn't have traditionally said was the purview of the workplace. Yes, it's an obvious facet of one's mental well-being, but it's one that I wouldn't have, for example, readily said is solved in the workplace. I'd love to just get your sense of, you know, picking up on that topic, what you think, again, employers should be looking out for, particularly next week, if they're thinking about communicating it during Mental Health Awareness Week. Why has it hit the top of kind of the priority list? Why has the Mental Health Association picked that as its theme?
I think probably it's picked that as its theme because it's come on the back of COVID, when a lot of people were working in isolation. And I know that during the pandemic, loneliness was three times more prevalent than it was previously. And about 25% of adults were feeling lonely in late 2020. So again, like I said about things that happen to us in our lives, loneliness is not in itself a mental illness. But the impact of loneliness can have a very negative effect on mental well-being and can lead to mental health conditions such as depression, anxiety, stress, low self-worth. So it's basically, the impact of loneliness, it can be very significant. And I think the opposite of loneliness, and just by the way, just because people are on their own doesn't mean to say they're lonely. They may be very happy with that. So we've got to be careful with that one. But people who are lonely are suffering as a result of not having that connectedness, that sense of belonging, that self-esteem, the self-worth of being part of a team, being connected with others. So that, when over time, can lead to a mental illness. So again, it's back to that prevention piece. If you sense somebody is lonely and in suffering with loneliness and the impact of it, it's about trying to address that with the individual before they become mentally unwell.
Indeed. Thank you. So, Christine, in these, I normally like to give my guests the last word. So what I'd love to do is ask you one question, or one ask, which is, what would you ask of our audience, or what would you recommend to them as their next step, as they're moving forward with their own approach to mental well-being? Is there anything that comes to mind that you'd say, look, just, for the majority of people, just start thinking about X or Y?
I guess it would go back to this almost cultural environment thing about watching out for each other, noticing something and saying, are you all right?
Very good. Very fair. Almost Jerry Springer-esque. Remember, people, take care of yourself and each other.
Yep.
Christine, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've got a huge amount out of talking to you today, so thank you. I know our audience will as well. And for everybody else, remember, Mental Health Awareness Week, 9th of May, and get communicating with your people. Thanks again, Christine.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Matthew.